Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, Fed Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for the talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And don't forget to use the Chrome browser. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is sfuoncall. That's sfuoncall. And also, if you want to follow my personal account, which is Paul Franz, that's just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. Just a reminder, I am a Catholic, so you'll see me retweeting things from the Pope, things from maybe Father Robert Balasair, which is actually, he's a tech Jesuit, a Jesuit priest that deals with tech a lot, and other things like that. Also, I'm heavily into baseball, so. Just a reminder. And, of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned out podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. Steve Cole is busily working Cubs Log number 53, trying to get it all done. Obviously, that's one thing. I have to submit all my articles in this weekend. I should have time. Also, he worked on the blogs, Shapeways, but not much else. So he's been really focused this past week. Steve Patrick was busy working on SMB updates. Also, on the Gorn Master Starship book, looks like he went back to the Gorn from working on Tholian last week. Jean was busy working on her parts of the captain's log. Also, repriced the ships on Shapeways because of course, the adjustment to the prices that have occurred. Materials and all that kind of thing. Also, she was busy proofreading parts that are not hers of Cabin's Log number 53. Also, keep busy with managing Facebook, different private messages, and also dealing with different responses to posts that people do on the Emerald Design Bureau's page. So, if you're on Facebook, go visit the page. Moving onward to the SFB Online tournaments. Actually, we have the Masters tournament still kind of running. It's kind of stopped dead. But they're actually on the discussion board. There is starting a discussion on different tournament setups, a way of having people. The important part of the discussion is that we have a problem with people dropping. For the limited number of people that we currently have, we no longer have like 30 or more people. So we're focusing on, getting the people who actually sign up for a tournament actually stick around and actually play their games within the limits of, so it doesn't last like 6 months to a year for or something that's supposed to last for 3 months. So that's happened on the discussion board. If you want to, go to www.starfleetgames.com/discuss. Or go right to the homepage, starfleetgames.com. And right there, you'll see one for the discussion board. Onward and forward, moving to the library report for this week. We do have progress. We have some more Paladines that were done by Frank LeMay. Thank you, Frankie. And completed conversions are all the way up to 2,481. Yet to be converted down to 849, with a percent complete being at 74.5%. So we're almost at 75% complete. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only Paul Franz, welcome you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, you got me, the bozo, who doesn't know how to turn off the mute button. This is take two, because the first take, I forgot to unmute the mute button. It's a beautiful weapon on my mic, so I can cough and do things like that, and you guys don't hear it. It doesn't get recorded, but The problem is, if you don't realize it's on, you can't record a thing. So I've been recording like 26 minutes of silence. So, really good. So, let's review what I've just been talking about for the past half hour. So the only person who can hear it is myself. So what I'm going to, do a quick overview. Number one, which is when it comes to the Tholians, the first thing you have to do is choose your ship. Do you want the Archaeotholian, Neotholian? The Archaeotholian will give you overall better, more power when you're going faster. The Neotholian will give you more power when you're going slower. Because of Moomba Class 1 versus 2 thirds. The Archaeotholian only have 33 points of power versus the Neotholian having 40 points of power. So that's always a gotcha. You have to decide which one do you want to go. If you plan on going faster, use the Archaeotholian. Obviously, the other advantage of flying the Archaeotholian is going to be the snares. The Archaeotholian has two snares versus the Neotholian having one, and that gives you an additional internal before the webcaster gets hit. Now, after you select your ship, which one you plan on flying, which one you like to fly, if you are brand new to the Tholian, my recommendation is your first game that you ever fly the Tholian, do not use the webcaster as a webcaster. Use it purely as a fifth disruptor because of this will allow you to get used to the weapon. Also, laying down that web can be a very, very tricky thing in that if you don't get it right, you can just waste your energy and it won't do squat tactically because the whole idea of the web is to act as mobile terrain, i.e. terrain that you can place wherever you want. It's not as mobile terrain as drones and plasma are because that's actually truly mobile terrain, i.e. it moves. But the web is more like dynamic terrain, as in you can define where it goes during the scenario. Okay, so so that's going to be critical because most of the time when you have a Tholian actually using the web, you're going to want to set it up so that you can approach that the web is far enough away from your opponent, but at the same time, the opponent has to do something about the web. He can't come straight in because if he comes straight in, he's going to hit the web and he's going to be stuck. And he doesn't want to be stuck because of that can, especially if he's going at high speed, he can break down. But also, he can, it's going to stop him from hitting, firing you because one thing that the Tholian really wants to do, he wants to approach the web. He wants to get really close to the web, as close as possible, and fire his phasers at his opponent, and so that he can run away, so he can get a better shot than his opponent can get, because his opponent can't fire through the web, but you can fire your phasers through the web, and so you can hit him like let's say range 5 with phaser 1s, while he can't fire at you, and by the time he gets around the web, that will show up as, you'll end up being around range 8 instead of range 5. So, you'll minimize the damage that you'll be taking because he can't fire. So that's one of those things, and that doing that, setting up that positionally is not always easy, and the key web form is a W. It's a usually five hexes in the shape of a W. It's rare that you actually have a straight line. The only time I've ever seen a straight line is when the Tholian is hunkering down in a corner. Because then your opponent, it makes it really hard for your opponent, because the opponent tries to go around has to go towards one of the walls to go around the web. You can come straight through the web and escape. How many people? That's a rare thing. But it's one thing to keep in mind, that if you ever get cornered like that, that's one thing I would do, especially, and if you can time it right, especially for if it's a drone chucker, it's a plasma chucker or a drone thrower, so that you can enter the web the same impulse that your opponent tries to go around the web or go through the web, you are golden. Because, yeah, he can launch out of the web, but if the web is between you and your opponent, that means whatever he does, if he fires so that you're still in his FA arc, because he can launch out of the hex, but then it has to kind of go around it. And then if he goes into it, he fires out of it, you come out of it, and it gets stuck in the web anyway. You know, so that is beauty. Russ asked this sidetrack. Russ asking a quick question where I was working on a recording of an SWB Online game that I played against someone. Yes, I did. And with your thinking, right? Yeah, with my commentary, yes. I still have that one. Yes, I have all three recordings. He's like, I'd love to experiment with it to make a quick 5 to 10 minute play-by-play. Still work on recording content. Not much lately. Thanks. Russ, just how much of it do you want? If I want to, I can give you the whole front piece, in which case we'd have to discuss about how to get that to you, because it's a pretty big file. I have to check to see how large it is. But if you want a copy of that, just tell me and I'll post it up somewhere, whether it is like on sfbonline.com, so you can download it directly from there, or Dropbox. Okay, the whole puppy. Well, realize it's in three separate parts. So I'd have to if you want the whole puppy, okay, just send me an email to remind me to send you a link to the full files, okay? I'll be happy to send them to you. Okay, back to the Tholian. Now, obviously, one of the good things about the Archaeotholian is that the Archaeotholian has a really nice side weapons. And the side weapons can really help you on defending. Now, obviously, the biggest issue that the Archaeotholian has versus the Neotholian is going to be disruptors. And because the Archaeotholian has two phaser, two FA arc disruptors, and then you have the two left front left, right front right. You know, actually, one of each. You know, each of those. Versus the Neotholian, which has four FA arc, which means invariably, if you're using the Archaeotholian, you'll only be able to hit three disruptors against your opponent at any one time. Because it's a truly rare thing that you're actually able to center line, because your opponent's not going to want to let you center line. And if he allows you the center line, he wants to be center line on you. There are, of course, there are ships like that, i.e. the Saltorian. And of course, if you're facing a Saltorian, you've got other troubles. That's what, because in my mind, that's one of those great wars, great battles, which is the Tholian versus Saltorian, because of each one has an alternate use for their secondary weapon system, or tertiary. Actually, it's tertiary, because usually phasers consider, well, actually, primary is heavy weapons, secondary is phasers, tertiary is usually like drones or plasma. In the case of the Tholians, it's their webcasters, basically webcasters, in my mind, because those are offensive weapons. You got defensive weapons, which is the snares, which are, in theory, they're tertiary, but, you know. The Saltorian will use his web breaker as a web breaker if the Tholian decides to use his webcaster as a webcaster. But if the Tholian decides to use his webcaster as a web for web bolting, i.e. a fifth disruptor, then the Saltorian, what it's going to do, it's going to switch its web breakers to being used as shield crackers. So, which makes it really interesting because of the Saltorian will be reacting to what you do. That's because of he has to. He's not gonna use a webbreaker as a shield cracker at long range. You know, and by the time that he gets into the range that he's gonna actually want to fire a web breaker as a shield cracker, you would have already decided whether you're going to be using a webcaster, webfist, i.e. a fifth disruptor. So, in that case, it comes down to almost a dogfight to a certain degree because of you got two empires that both have, neither have seeking weapons, except for, of course, the suicide shuttles. But overall, they don't have seeking weapons, which means that it's going to be a close-range battle. Or you know, I've seen it before because I've done it before, which is, you know, head and hit and run away. But usually, those kind of things happen for seeking weapon, because you want to get away from the seeking weapons. Now, obviously, the Tholians have a tremendous, tremendous advantage over seeking weapon races. Well, especially the plasma. The plasmas, you get those plasmas stuck in a web, and you can run away from them, and they can die pretty quickly. And of course, then you have the snares. The snares are wonderful for that. And as I, well, okay, no, as I pointed out on the part that you did not hear, if you can get it to as an opposite oblique, i.e., that you have the seeking weapon coming in at either directly on shield number 5 or shield number 3, and you fire the snare for one or two hexes, and then you can turn to the oblique, i.e., if he's coming in shield number 5, you fire your snare that it covers the left side, and then you turn right. So it's kind of a direct angle, and that's the problem with the way the snares are set up for the tournament, which is either right side or left side. Of course, I think everyone would agree that they would love to have it so that those snares were just rear arc. Because then you could just run away. And then as you run away, you can then just have the seam webs just run into it. Now, one of the few times, obviously, one of the beauties of the web snare is in the case of a dogfight or a knife fight, close in range, close fire, that will allow you to set up a breach, a way of protecting yourself, especially between turns. You know, that's, you can fire that, you can get an extra shield, basically bring up some protection when your shield go down, or you have to, that you know you're going to have your shield facing your opponent. So the, you can put up that snare because it's close in battle, and the question is, will your opponent actually run through it and have the possibility, well, not possibility, definitely get stuck in it? Most probably he won't. He'll probably use it as mobile terrain, dynamic terrain, and he has to go around it, or he'll wait for it to, die, because again, it's a cast web, therefore it only lasts for, I think it's 32. If I recall correctly, it's 32 impulses. It's been a while since I looked up the rules for the webcasters, but so. You're gonna be using it a lot for that, which is having caught up. Now, one thing you might need to keep an eye on as a Tholian, and using either the snares or the webcaster to protect your skins against drones. Here's the one thing you have to remember: for certain empires, they would love you to do that. For example, the Wind Black Shark or the Wind Battlecruiser, Auxiliary Battlecruiser. They would love to do that. Why? Because they don't have a scatter pack. So it makes it harder for them to create a large scale drone wave. Same for the Klingon. Because if you can get it so that you cast your web and his drones get caught, yes, it's going to spend some time there, but it has to be three turns. But then he can launch another set of drones, which makes it a lot easier. He can have them captured too, and at some time in those 32 impulses, they will be set free to find you and destroy you. They'll try to destroy you, but basically it gives them an opportunity to create a larger stack. Now, of course, the one thing that will have to, that the Klingon or Wynn or whatever that's going to be launching this drone is going to have to be careful about is that, in a way, you don't want to create that super stack, that stack of 4 to 6 drones, because of that gives the Tholian player the opportunity to more easily deploy the web snare against those seeking weapons. Well, because what I'm thinking about is if you use a cast web against them, you still should use it. I'm not saying you shouldn't use them. But that's one thing that the web can be used against in that case. Now, how often will that happen? That's a rare thing, because that requires two things to occur. One, that at the very least, that the opponent's ship is near that web, near between turns, because it requires two turns to set up. The drones have to come from one turn, from the previous turn, and then the next turn to actually have that stacking to occur, or at the very least, have it so they're close by, so they have a nice wall, Even if they don't stack them, so you have 4 to 6 in a stack, you have two to three in one stack, two to three in another stack, but they're right next to each other, which gives him really mobile terrain. But again, as I said, it's a limited case, but it's always something to keep an eye on about when you're casting, when you're using those, the web, and how you use it, because that's also one of the things that can be used against you. Now, how often that'll occur? It's a rare thing. You know, it's the casting the web, especially when it comes to the snares. If you can get them capture those snows, the drones again and again and again and again, the great thing about that, obviously, is that you, for one point of energy, you can destroy a stack of drones. Might take 2 points of energy because it might take multiple turns, but it allows you to draw out how long it takes them to hit you, because remember, those drones only have 3 turns. So that's one thing to keep in mind, because if you can keep getting them hit, you know, hit the web, in that case, you can actually kill them without actually firing a single weapon, per se, meaning phasers and so forth. In which case, those weapons can then be used against your opponent in an offensive manner, instead of having it so that the saying goes, remember to use your tractors, damn it. You know, keep in mind is that you have all this ability in this ship. Remember every little trick, every little thing that you have available to you. Now, obviously, I'm sure people would love to have a web snare actually could form a web fist, but, you know, it's a limitation, and for a good reason. Of course, I still, to this day, disagree with with Steve Cole when it comes to probes. Each and every ship that's in existence has a probe launcher, and that probe launcher, you can spend energy to charge that probe launcher, and what does it do? And when you're not using it for as a weapon, which is an emergency weapon that you can use. It's an awful weapon, but it's an emergency weapon. But in the case of ships like old the Andromedan, you can use that probe launcher as a lab. It takes 2 turns to charge, but you can use it as an additional lab. When you have limited lab capabilities, it really would help to have that extra lab for that extra drone that is coming towards you. You know, obviously, you're not going to have the same issue when it comes to plasma, because you know who's it's coming to you, and you have no way of identifying whether it's a pseudo or not until it hits you. Now, so as I pointed out, the Tholian a lot of times is going to be flying around the board. Now, most part, you're not going to want to grab the center of the board. Most part, you want to be closer to the edge of the board, because of that allows you time to set up the web. Number two, the ability to use, as I said here, the wall is your friend. As I pointed out, you know, you could get caught in the corner, and the corner actually is not a bad thing for the falling with it when the cast web. You know, it's not really a bad thing. And if you can, and timing, which is, I know this is the most difficult thing in the world to do, and it is, but it is possible, especially with a mid-turn speed change, you might be able to time it right, which is the ability to have it so that when he's coming in, you're coming out, basically. When it comes to the corner, because you're already set for it. But again, it's t- timing, and it's not always easy because of you're probably going to be in the corner longer than he's going to be out. So he's going to take him like 10 impulses or more to get to you while you're in the corner. So you have maybe 2 hexes to go. So you're not going to be going very fast. And there's always that issue when you're going slower that it limits your availability of mid-turn speed changes to get you to a speed that you are able to move the next impulse.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, because going speed 4, there's a limited capability to do a really quick mid-turn speed change of like one, just like increase 1 or 2 and boom. No, you have to increase like 5 to 10 to have the ability to actually go move the next impulse when you like moving. You would move by impulse 8, but then you want to move impulse 9. Well, okay, you want to do that. That might be a little more difficult. I have to look at the weapons chart, the impulse chart, to see exactly what speed you actually would go, because I don't think anyone has got that memorized. I don't have it right down in front of me, unfortunately, and I apologize for that. So, the Thalians are an interesting beast and not an easy ship to fly. Either one of the ships, either Neo or Archeo. And depending upon how fast you plan on flying, that will define which ship you want to fly. If you want to keep it kind of low and steady approach, Neo Tholian probably is better. If you want to be flying around the board, i.e. you think you're going to be facing a lot of seeking weapons, then go with Archeo. I think most people who fly the Tholians usually fly the Archeo because of the Archeo has better speed. And of course, then there's the additional snare. But of course, the big issue for the Archeos is that stopping in the corner is a lot more difficult. It's a lot easier to do if you have the Neo because you have more power, therefore more protection, and so forth. So, I think, well, that'll be the end for that topic for this evening. I have a little bit of time, especially given that I don't want to make this too short of a podcast. And that is something that came up on the discussion board. And that is that, unfortunately, I did not check it last Friday. Discussion board is not exactly an easy thing. Well, it's one of those additional venues you need to do. And that is the whole idea of we've got quite a few tournaments that we can play in, and it gets really hard to have people get done their games. They drop out. In some cases, it's understandable because of there's always that big issue of real life issues when it comes to online gaming. In that you set up a game or you set up a tournament, you have to say, okay, now here's your opponent. Now figure out a time that works with you for both of you, you know, scheduling conflicts and all. Given your time zones, because you have somebody that might be on the East Coast, somebody on the West Coast, or worse, somebody's on the West Coast and someone's in England. And getting them a time that they actually can get together and play is not exactly always an easy thing to do. Now, the one thing we're trying to do with the discussion that I just set up, a new topic, new thread on the discussion board, which is the whole idea is to discuss this topic. And this topic is, how do we get people who sign up for tournament, and that is to stick with it, to play the game, to know, not drop out. So, we had some ideas that I saw got posted last Friday. I reposted them in new topics so that those weren't lost, and there were some other things that came, you know, after it, which were not really relevant to discussing the topic at hand. They were more like showing interest about joining a tournament. But anyway, getting back to it, posted up, you know, some of the ideas were basically have a pay-to-play tournament, i.e. if you want to play in a tournament, you have to set aside a fee. I'm thinking some, as I mentioned in my reply to those posts, something like a $10 tournament fee. $10 is not exorbitant in my mind. It's enough. It's high enough that people who are truly interested in playing in a tournament will sign up. Obviously, if there's going to be a cost, there has to be a prize. Now, my original idea is a 50-50 split. Whole idea is 50% would go to prizes, 50% would go to ADB and Friends Games for running the tournament. Now, that part I'd have to talk with ADB about if that's possible. Obviously, another approach for the tournament and the money wise is have a flat fee, and then you have prizes based off level of interest, and possibly have it so that all of the money goes towards prizes. So that the only thing that Friends Games gets is the way of encouraging people to play. ADB gets their licensing fees for, you know, for just playing on SMB Online, and we're all happy and we're all fine when it comes to licensing and all that kind of thing, which is one thing I'd have to look into. But I see there's a couple of responses. Hopefully we get more responses. I will hopefully get back to the discussion board tomorrow, possibly tonight. It looks like they're two short, quick things. I'm not reading them now. I just noticed that they are there. And hopefully we can have this discussion going. So if you want to be part of that discussion, go to starfleetgames.com. And that's going to be the homepage. There's a button called Discuss. And click on that button and it'll bring it to the discussion board. If you don't already have an account, create an account. It's pretty simple to do. I apologize that it's not secure. I doesn't have an HTTPS connection. That's something that I definitely need to talk to ADB about. This one thing that everyone's going secure, and people are going to be less and less willing to use these kind of forums because they're non-secure. And they're worried about people stealing passwords and all that kind of thing. And I totally understand that. I think in some cases it's a little bit overblown. As long as you're in a secure network, you're fine. Obviously, you don't want to be posting to this if you're start hanging out at Starbucks. That would be a bad thing. But anyhow, I think, as I replied, I said, I think that the money aspect is a good way. As I pointed out, that is, even if it's just a dollar, basically, you have to have people who really want to play the game, really want to be part of the tournament, and are willing to make quote-unquote sacrifices, i.e. look at their schedule and either make a hard look at it and go, can I play? Can I schedule a game in the next 2-3 weeks and be able to do that? Am I able to do that? And don't sign up if you can't do it. Or make the adjustment to say, you know, I was going to go with this, but I'm in this tournament. I'm going to be doing this instead. So I think money helps people to put value in that tournament. The problem is people who get things for free or are able to do things for free do not value the product. Something I learned long ago and far away. I was part of Amway. Great company. Just didn't work for me. I'm not that kind of a person. But that's one thing they were teaching, which is, you know, even they had these seminars that you go to, and it cost you a little bit of money, not something extraordinary, but it'd be like $10 or $15 for someone to attend. And because of it cost us money to attend, it was worth something. It had something of value. It was considered something of value. If it's free, you're not going to attend. People who have a free ticket are less likely to show up than someone who has, okay, this is a $15 ticket. You know, it cost me $15 out of my own pocket. So I'm willing to spend the money. The prizes, obviously, that'd be a good thing. Another thing that was brought up is you need to have consequences. That is, if you cannot play your game, you forfeit your game. You do not get your money back. You put your money in as a tournament fee. It's for playing in the tournament. If you decide that you're not going to be playing in the tournament because of you're unwilling to make the sacrifices when it comes to scheduling to play your game, you forfeit your money. So, I think that's a completely valid situation. Now, I understand there are certain things that come up, where real life comes up, where you need to withdraw from the tournament. Now, I would think those would be few and far between, especially on the first round. I can see this if it's going to be, I know Ted wants it to be like a single month tournament. I don't think we're going to be able to do that. That means you have to, each week you have to schedule a game. I don't think many people can do that. That's why I was thinking 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, I'm sure there's a slot that you can find to play a game. Also, another thing which was pointed out, which I think is an excellent idea, get rid of the never-ending battles. Remove it. I know it's online, and therefore, in theory, you can play as long as you want. Here's the thing. What happens with that mentality is that you're no longer under pressure to get your game done in a certain period of time and get it completed. You're not going to be nearly as aggressive in your play if you know you've got 8 hours or maybe as long as you need. But if you limit the game to 3 or 4 hours, you say after 3 or 4 hours, no matter, you know, 3 or 4 hours of play time, i.e. you start the game. If you take a 5 minute break, that's part of that clock. You can't pause the clock. If you have to take an hour break, okay, you basically pause, you save the game, you pause the clock, you come back in an hour. But after 3 hours, 3 or 4 hours, you are done. That's it. And here's the one thing this is one of those things that I cannot add into the client to enforce. That, especially because the tournament room is, you know, it's meant for tournament play, not just this kind of tournament play. But at the same time, there's a certain aspect of it that players have to be willing to say, hey, we've already, according to the tournament, this is the only thing I was talking about to them about, which was, okay, if we were going to do this and actually tracking the time, when it comes to the client itself, I would probably best if I added a timer into the client, a time tracker, i.e. when you started up the room, boom, it started a tracker going. When you save the game, it would save that time. So it would keep track of how much time that you spent in the game. And so that you would know, even given multiple sessions, if you want to try to split up on multiple sessions, whether, you know, if you only can play for an hour and then you have to have it adjudicated, Yeah, and yes, Russ, and the whole idea is it'd be like a standard rated ace tournament. Standard rated ace tournament in on physical form. When it comes to Origins, you had 3 hours. That was it. That's because of you had to get through so many games on the weekend. And so you had 3 hours to complete it. And after that, you'd have a triumvirate, i.e. at least three judges to go, okay, each player would submit their EAs, and including to the EAs that they would submit, okay, this is how I would defeat my opponent. You come up with the standard things. Okay, what is your plan for the future? And how do you plan on defeating your opponent? And invariably, you know, the keynote people, for anyone who's going to do any kind of tournament play, and you have to go against a triumvirate of judges on discussing who to win, you need to think through the game. You need to not only have it so that you know what you're going to do, but you keep in mind, what is your opponent going to do? How is your opponent going to react? Which means, in some cases, that means you have to have an idea of what kind of person are you playing against. Obviously, I'll have to agree that playing online gives us that degree of separation where it makes it very, very difficult for people to judge what kind of person that person is. You don't have the face contact, you don't have the body language, you can't read those things anymore, which makes things all the more difficult. Obviously, in theory, you could use Discord or some other audio conferencing software to add on to the experience. So in that case, you might actually be able to alleviate part of that separation. So at least you can hear it in the person's voice. You know, are they being snide? Are they, you know, what kind of person are they? You know, because you can measure, you know, the voices, that at least one of those things that gives you an idea of the kind of person you're dealing with. How they react and especially in their voice. Obviously, they have voice, you have body language, all those kind of things, and certain things you cannot do unless you have, if you want to go so far as to have a video, which you can do. Most people don't do that. You don't set up like a hangout, though hangouts are going away. So, we'll just have to wait and see that. We're going to discuss the tournament. I have to also discuss it with ADB, because charging money, there might be some issue there, because I want to make sure I don't violate any licenses. We don't have Paramount coming down on us. Because my understanding is that tournaments are basically, it's a way of demonstrating the product. When you get to tournaments where you actually have pay fees, I'm not sure that's allowed, because then it's more, it's not even about making money in that case. Because of, to me, especially in the case of where you have all the money going out as prizes, that means you're not they're not earning money from people playing tournaments per se. It's a side thing. You people pay for the service, and therefore you get money for them to play the service. And the way to encourage them to play the service is that you run these tournaments. You know, so have to wait and see. Okay, with that, I better wrap up because I need to work tomorrow. And even though I started late, I cannot go much later without really hurting myself. So I'm going to wrap up now. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.